Hi, Christina.
Hi, Dave. I was reflecting on this idea of grace. And maybe I don't understand it, but I see grace as something that comes to us that we have no control over it.
Right.
So, forgiving is a daily reality for us. And the idea that we depend on something that is only given to us beyond our control to become something that is very important and big is a little discouraging. So, however, Jackie gave me an idea there. Wouldn't it make more sense for something as important as forgiving, learning to forgive, that God would build in our humanity a way to help us progress rather than something that we just depend on whenever? So I thought Jackie kind of showed the way. Maybe psychology shows the way that forgiving is not something that we can necessarily always do consciously, that there are deeply hidden pains that the dreams can heal, that the subconscious maybe there's better than talk therapy, in mm-hmm. other words. And if anything, these maybe God leads us to the way of new ways of looking, like the new energy therapies, like EMDR that helps the vets get over PTSD. Talk of forgiving. You know, PTSD is just absolutely stunting. So anyway, I was just thinking maybe we need to look for a better way, and that God has already granted the grace of this way. Mm-hmm. And Jackie showed that the dreams are one way that our human nature wants us to move on, and that the Spirit will talk to us. Anyway, that's what I was saying. The idea of grace and depending on it, even though it sounds wonderful, it's not very encouraging for something we need daily, you know.
Okay, thank you. Maybe it would help to look at it this way, because you asked a good question, which is there something else we can turn to in ourselves? And you're right. We can turn for messages to our unconscious. They come to us in dreams, for instance. But also, consciously, and this is the part that's the built-in grace, is in every person, there is a full and intact capacity to love. I'll never forget on the anniversary of the Shoah, it was the closing of one of the camps like Auschwitz. And on 60 Minutes, they had a little section on this. And they had a famous and very wise rabbi. Mike Wallace was interviewing him. And this is the question he asked. He said, "You say you're the chosen people, but yet you were so terribly treated during World War II by the Nazis and all the silent people around them who participated in your extermination. In what sense do you use that phrase, chosen people?" And I remember thinking, oh my Lord, I wouldn't be able to answer this question. But this is what he said without the slightest blinking of an eye, and I thought it was so beautiful and so perfect. He said, "We're chosen in the sense that even though there have been all these pogroms and exterminations throughout history, we never lost our capacity to love. That's how we're chosen." He said, it isn't that you take it literally, that somebody's going to intervene and make everything come out all right. He even said, "I don't even think the parting of the Red Sea actually happened. What happened was, oppressed people were able to go on loving." So I expanded that in my own mind, and I said, oh, okay, so that actually refers to all humans. We've all been hurt in so many ways from the beginning until now of our lifetime. But look, something has survived. That's the capacity to love, always available. And that's the what I call our interior grace. And then our interior voice of God is unconscious. Our unconscious. And this unconscious shows itself in two basic ways. In dreams and in synchronicity. Unusual coincidences in which things come together for you. You know you didn't cause it. But there it is, and it really helps you. So these would be considered graces also. In that sense, grace is always available. But the challenge of living in accord with statements about living in accord with the sermon that says love your enemies and so forth, that will take more than just grace. That will take practice also. And on page 150, I give some recommendations of these practices. For instance, you can seek reconciliation and forgiveness from others. You can do what Kate brought up and what they do in the AA program, make amends and ask for amends. You can choose nonviolence in your disputes. You can live by example, teach by example, not by coercion. You can be generous. You can return good for evil. You can respect love and wisdom over position and wealth. You can let go of anxiety about how things will turn out because you have a trust that an absolute loyalty and honoring of what occurs is the true path to freedom from fear. And finally, you can let go of judgment and competitiveness. And instead of judging, you can have compassion. Instead of competing, you have cooperation. So we can do things like this. That full conversion takes grace. But we can do some things. Examples in what I just read out. Hi.
Hi. So earlier you were talking about the process of becoming Christ-like and being.
Yeah.
Do you think that the answer to the question of how do we forgive a huge hurt is if we are Christ, we will be forgiving. So the farther down that progression we get,
yeah,
the more likely we are to be able to have the grace to forgive.
Yes. Yes, that's a good way to put it. The further down you are, if all you have is that you belong to the church and you behave in the way the church recommends in most areas, and you believe in what the church teaches for the most part, and that you have understood that becoming more and more like Christ in the world is a good idea and you are trying it, the further down the list you get, especially when you get to the what you just brought up, where you just automatically are like Christ and are Christ in the world, then it's easier and easier to forgive. If you only have the belonging, it's going to be hard to forgive. If you only have the belong and behave, that'll be hard, etc. Everybody get the basic concept? Okay. Dennis? Oh, this is Dennis, and this is his idea. So here he is.
Well, it seems to me there's a hidden component in that question of how will I forgive the seemingly unforgivable? And that is, we're asking that question, how will I forgive the seemingly unforgivable while otherwise remaining pretty much the same person I've always been? And that is probably the great challenges of forgiveness wind up being challenges to sort of reorganize oneself somewhat the way you shake a kaleidoscope. When you shake a kaleidoscope, all the same beads are there, but they fall into a new pattern. So it does seem like these giant challenges to forgive represent challenges for us to become the kind of next person on our pilgrimage through life. Because our pilgrimage through life is kind of like, this has one transformation after another. The other thing I wanted to comment on was that the Dalai Lama, when he came here to Santa Barbara, made a wonderful suggestion about this, and it has stuck in my mind ever since. He said, when someone injures you, think of a circumstance in which you yourself could be so confused that you would do exactly that same thing, or you would make exactly that same mistake. And then you won't carry the person around inside of you as a demon anymore. They're just one more confused human being, because we've all been confused. We've all been angry to the point where we've done things that we later regretted. So that sets the stage for us to say, oh yes, that person over there is one more confused, suffering human being who does things that cause pain. And on that basis, we can have compassion. Perhaps maybe we, when we think about using the word love, we attach all sorts of positive emotions to it. There could be different versions of love. There could be gentle, compassionate acceptance. Yes, I accept that person as a suffering human being who makes all sorts of mistakes. And may they find their way to a more humane way of being in the world, which is the same thing I wish for myself.
Okay. Thank you, Dennis. That's very helpful. So, we're really going deeply into this topic, and I'm so glad we're doing this. And all the things that people have shared have helped deepen what I'm bringing up. I mean, I'm learning a lot from all that you're saying. But I just want to say one last thing on the Be Christ. You might look at it this way, that each of us gives Christ the opportunity of a lifetime, literally, this lifetime of David and this lifetime of Jenny are unique ways that Christ lives his life again. He didn't just live in Israel from the year 0 to 30. The meaning of resurrection is he is still living, and every single human is giving him that opportunity. So when you ask for the grace to be Christ in the world, what you're really asking for is what's already true. It's just that now you want to show it. This has already happened. It happened at your birth. So all that's left is, oh, then how do I act that way? And he showed us how. Matthew 5, Sermon on the Mount, Beatitudes, full list of exactly what it would take.